Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we're going to talk about Season 8, Episode 4, Bitten, written by Robbie Thompson and directed by Thomas J. Wright. Welcome to an episode that Robbie Thompson loves and wishes more people loved. I personally love this one, though I know a lot of folks are less fond of it for various reasons, like werewolves aren't their favorite monsters to deal with, or the fact that it takes all the direct focus off Sam and Dean, and that can feel a little disappointing, I get it. But I sincerely appreciate the outsider point of view, and I love to see what the Winchesters look like to people who are just discovering the supernatural in their world, especially in a worst-case scenario like this episode presents us with. And yeah, there's a few things in this one with Kate's story in general that we'll touch back in a couple seasons that just make me sad for everyone, but we'll talk about that briefly later on. At this point in canon, where Sam and Dean are both keeping some secrets from each other and struggling with their new working arrangement, especially with Sam back on his, "I don't want to keep hunting forever, and when this is out, I'm out of hunting forever," nonsense that he's back on, because he's just not genre savvy enough yet. It's nice to get a break from it, just being the two of them stewing about these things for another week. Fresh perspective just works for me here. The show's been asking us since season one, what makes a monster? And the answer to that has been evolving ever since. What makes a person monstrous, or a monster a person? Who deserves to live and die, and why? Their choices and actions, far more than what they are. In a season where Dean has befriended a vampire and is struggling to come to terms with his feelings about an angel, it's a very interesting perspective for us to see, because they're also embarking on this drive to shut the gates of hell, tinkering with the natural order for what they believe are all the right reasons. But in Supernatural, that just makes them the bad guys. And I'd like for us all to remember that throughout season 8. That said, we do learn a few things in this one, but there's not really much to delve into in the opening notes about that here. So we'll just get on with the episode, because this is one of the outliers that doesn't have a then segment. Even the structure of the episode itself doesn't fit the usual mold. From the 20-minute opening segment before the first commercial break, to the credits running at the end of the episode instead of the beginning, to the musical choices feeling off for not being classic rock. And all of that is down to the fact that, in show, we are watching Kate's version of events through her lens, quite literally. We open on a blood-spattered room where a fight to the death has clearly occurred. Body parts lie strewn about, and another body is covered with a sheet. When Sam and Dean bust in, guns drawn, they stop the music that's playing and find a laptop with a pink post-it note telling them, "Play me," like an Alice in Wonderland "Drink Me" tag. They hit play, and the presentation begins with the text, "This should have never ended this way." And then we cut to the title card. And yeah, maybe it shouldn't have ended this way, but man, half the things in this episode just should never have happened at all. I just feel for Kate so much. We cut back to where we left off. Sam and Dean sitting in the ruin of this house, watching as we meet three college kids. The two boys are making a film. Brian is the president of the AV club, and Michael is a himbo. And Brian narrates his initial thoughts about random people in the cafe until one girl catches him. He panics and hands the camera off to Michael, who's holding it when Kate comes over filming them with her own camera, playing their game better than they were. She starts flirting with Michael, asking about his camera, which he clearly knows nothing about, while we catch glimpses of Brian looking real sour about this. But, like, he handed Michael the camera in the first place. He could have been having this chat with Kate, but he chose not to. He put it off onto Michael. We cut to later that night, back at Brian and Michael's house, and Kate walks out of Michael's room only wearing his shirt. She crosses the room behind where Brian's sitting, editing his footage, and we see him looking pretty bitter about that. We're also learning that he's got the whole house set up with cameras, like every inch of this place is wired. And I really need to point out here, all these shots that we see of Brian, they're not Brian's choice to show us here. We're watching the film that Kate cut together. This is her perspective on what happened. And it's important to note that she noticed all of this about Brian when she was finishing his film. Is this how she always saw him? I don't think so. I think the events of this episode opened her eyes to a lot about him. But there was no denying this underlying truth by the time she cut the footage together for us to see. She did get to pick and choose what to leave in and what to cut out, though. And she left us a lot of interesting cut shots like this. Also, Thomas J. Wright left us a lot of them, too, because, you know, a lot of the heavy lifting in this episode is down to the directing and editing, so kudos to him. Kate gets the credit for it in show, but let's credit the real director. Sometime later, the three friends are back at the cafe where they first met. Kate's talking film with Brian, and as always, he's recording. He could have engaged with her about their mutual interests. He could have demonstrated that he was a guy worth her time. But instead, he gives a couple of terse, like monosyllabic replies, and then tries to out Michael to her, telling her, you know, he knows nothing about cameras or filmmaking. And Kate only replies with a smile that she's trying to teach him. She's not with Michael because she thinks he's some sort of filmmaking genius. She just likes the guy. When Michael comes back with a froofy drink for Kate, he catches the end of that and asks, oh, teaching what? And Kate resumes her flirting with him. She calls him her boyfriend, and they kiss, leaving Brian once again feeling like the third wheel, to the point that he turns the camera away from them. Later on at their house, Brian is again on his computer, again filming himself, while Kate and Michael are relaxing on the sofa and talking about where they see themselves in 5 years. Brian smiles and covertly turns the camera around to film them. Kate wants to be a lawyer. Something green. She's a good person. She then takes the camera and turns it around on Brian, asking him the same question. We see not only what she's filming, but also footage on Brian's computer screen from his webcam of her filming him. He wants to make documentaries. Michael's sitting on the couch still, reading the Weekly World News with his feet up, and he just answers that he wants to be on a boat in the middle of the ocean with his girlfriend. They kiss again, and we cut to a shot of Brian again, deliberately looking away. We cut to a class, with Brian filming again, and Kate trying to wake up Michael, who'd fallen asleep, before Brian turns the camera and zooms all the way into a pin on the professor's collar. For some reason, this college class is studying Lord of the Flies, which we did in my first year of high school, but hey, I guess everyone's entitled to remedial English lit at some point. But Michael slept through the entire lecture. Afterward, Kate teases him about it, and we see just how much Michael really does love his friend Brian too. Only Brian really sees their friendship as some sort of struggle. I think at this point, Kate also sees Brian as a real friend, but that's clearly not enough for Brian. While they're effectively group hugging here, someone comes barreling into them, knocking the camera to the ground, and it's Michael who calls the jerk an asshat while Brian's struggling to get the camera back up. So this whole encounter is filmed from a very low angle, camera on the ground, which makes it feel towering, like Michael's conflict with this random asshat is some sort of monumental moment that Brian is missing out on because, you know, he's like down on the ground with the camera. He's a small person compared to them, at least in his own mind, you know? But the asshat is herded away by his friends, and Brian is upset about damage to his camera. They next walk up to a crime scene where they're bringing a bloodied body under a sheet out to the coroner's van, and a very familiar car pulls up in the background. Brian asks Kate to help him film what's going on. She's worried it's not legal, but also that they live only two blocks away from where someone was murdered. Brian comments that Sam and Dean are Starsky and Hutch, and Michael suggests Rizzoli and Isles, and the queer-coded jokes just keep rolling from Michael. He's got like half a dozen in here, and none of them feel pointed or mean-spirited. They're all just like casual comments, which I do appreciate. Thank you, Robbie. I need to point out Sam and Dean's aliases here. Sam is Rose, like Axl Rose, and Dean is Hudson, who we all know better as Slash. So that makes Dean the Slash character, and I really appreciate that in a Robbie Thompson episode because 100% Robbie Thompson knows what Slash fiction is. He knows what that term means in the context of fandom. His very first episode of Supernatural was entitled Slash Fiction. So yes, Robbie knows what that means, and he knows what it means that he gave Dean that alias. They learn someone was killed and that a potentially unreliable witness heard growling noises, like from a coyote. Loyal Supernatural viewers might already be thinking, ah, werewolf, gotcha, since we have context for what it means when Sam and Dean are investigating a murder. But our POV characters who are telling us this story have no idea at all. To them, these are actually two FBI agents who are looking into this. Kate is clearly shaken by this. A murder only two blocks away that's serious enough to have brought the FBI on scene. But Brian is unshaken. Mostly because he's just a good himbo, Michael puts on a song that was playing when he and Kate met, and then prepares to go out to test cameras with Brian. Kate points out they're just going out to film some cutscenes from Jackass, just doing dumb shit for fun, and Michael counters with the fact that Brian doesn't have anyone else to do this with. Michael is clearly making room for his best friend in his life, and Kate is in no way upset about this. They're nice, normal, healthy people with healthy relationships. Or so they think at this point. At least Kate and Michael are. Once they're outside, Brian's trying to climb a tree, hanging upside down, and he notices Sam and Dean in the background yet again, interviewing a couple of other people. So Brian and Michael sneak over to film them without them noticing, which raises questions about just how much footage there might be of Sam and Dean doing hunter things in the background of shots. You know, how many snippets of their conversations do folks have and just not realize how bizarre what they're saying actually is? But it's interesting for me to get this outsider perspective, where we can see those outsiders trying to make sense of what they're hearing. I find that incredibly enjoyable, and I wish we had more of it in the series. Sam insists that there is no case here, and Dean insists that there is, that Sam is just rusty, and they need to dig a little deeper. When they walk off, Michael jokes that he's getting a workplace romance vibe off of them, and hoo boy. I mean, we know what the situation is. The argument that Sam and Dean have been having since Dean came back from purgatory about Sam's year off hunting, leaving him rusty. But Michael just does not have the correct lens to interpret it. In all likelihood, the bit of their conversation we haven't seen was Sam trying to convince Dean to go after Kevin again instead of all these random hunts. Sam wants to get back on their hell-slamming mission so he can go back to college and his normal, monster-free life. But just how realistic is that plan, though? considering what happens to these kids' dreams for the future by the end of this episode. That's not great foreshadowing for you, Sam. Brian and Michael are already in sneaking mode now, though, and they catch the asshat from earlier, the dude who knocked Brian's camera to the ground, making out with a girl by the bleachers. He goes a little too far, and it's clear she's trying to fight him off, which she finally does. And as she runs away, he yells, "Hey, what's your problem?" at her. Like it's her problem that she doesn't want to be molested against her will. All the while, Brian and Michael basically just laugh at the guy from the bushes. Unfortunately, Brian drops his camera, and the asshat notices them and takes his frustrations out on them, so they run for it, with the asshat in pursuit. Asshat's running after Brian, so Michael yells out for Brian to meet him at this guy's mother's house, and Scott, because asshat isn't actually his name, turns and chases Michael instead. Michael made himself the target to save Brian from getting beat down by this guy. Michael seems to have made his escape, moves into the trees to hide, and we get some Blair Witch style talking into the camera. He says, "Thanks for a great night out, Brian," and like he's enjoying it, joking about it. And then the smile falls from his face as something growls in the trees behind him. He's clearly scared, starts to run, and then is grabbed and falls. And the camera cuts in and out as something attacks him, and he screams. We then cut to Brian's point of view, telling us and Michael that Scott gave up trying to catch them, went home. He finds Michael's camera first, and then Michael himself, breathing hard and bleeding from a wound on his shoulder. When they get home and try to treat the wound, despite all the blood, the wound is completely gone. Kate hangs up on her attempted call to 911 and thinks for a moment that Brian and Michael were just pranking her, but it's clear from the terrified look on Michael's face that no, this was not a prank. The next day, Michael's sleeping on the sofa while Kate and Brian sit at the coffee table on the floor, and Brian is trying to reassure her. The doctor said that Michael was fine, but she's facing what it might mean if she were to lose Michael. She had a real shock. He could have been killed, you know? And she's just facing that mortality after they're making plans for their lives together. Michael stirs, so Brian and Kate put their heads down and pretend to have been sleeping, until Michael pulls the bathroom door clean off the hinges. Because that's a pretty insane thing to happen. But clearly this is more of a fascinating development than a cause for immediate concern. They play around with Michael's newfound super strength. He picks up Kate and holds her above his head, one-handed. What had been terrifying a little while ago is temporarily exciting again. Is Michael a superhero now? Does this tie back into the FBI being there? What could have caused this? Because of this development, Brian sets up a bunch more cameras. He doesn't want to miss a second of whatever is happening to Michael. Because Michael is Brian's new movie project. Kate thinks that's a terrible idea, but Brian wants to document his origin story, in case he really is a superhero now. Michael's just casually making himself a snack when Brian approaches him, asks him not to laugh, and then just says he wants to be able to do what Michael can, and he wants Michael to take him back out into the woods to see if he can get bitten by the same thing that bit Michael. He wants to be a superhero too. Michael cuts him off. He thinks Brian's nuts, that they don't even know what's happening to him yet. For all they know, this is going to go terribly. And he already kind of knows what he's feeling inside of himself. And he's not sharing all of that with everybody, even though he kind of knows and feels something truly awful is going on in there. He's not going to burden his friends with that information, even if it's kind of scaring him, too. But Brian doesn't care. He wants to be super strong and to have a chance to, quote, get some ass this year. And, like, Dude, you had a chance with Kate at one point and literally handed it off to Michael. But Michael still tells him no, and Brian has a little temper tantrum. He drops his camera, kicks a chair, and then stomps off. I love that this is how we get character insight, through literally their own lenses, that Kate saw this footage, sought it out specifically, and included his little temper tantrum. She saw through everything that Brian did throughout this episode. Later on, Brian is back at his computer, and Kate and Michael are on the sofa when there's a knock at the door. Brian sees through the peephole that it's the FBI, and Michael and Kate scramble to hide the bong and weed, and Kate films through the window as Sam and Dean ask Brian about the murder, if he's heard about anyone being bitten, and Brian says no. Sam hands him a card, and Kate continues to film through the window as Sam and Dean walk away. And out of context, it does sound like they're having a very strange conversation. Dean asks Sam what he thinks, and clearly they don't have any real leads yet, because Sam comments with how little evidence they have so far. For all they know, they could be dealing with another Mayan god. Just like last week's episode, where a Mayan god had people ripping hearts out, very much like their current victim probably had a ripped out heart. But without that context, Michael hears this and thinks, wait, does this make me a god? Because he doesn't understand that they don't mean a being with god powers. They mean very specifically something that rips hearts out. So the poor bean is thrilled with this potential development. Later that night, he gets out of bed and brings a camera into the bathroom. He's chanting, "I'm a god, I'm a god." And then he all of a sudden looks a lot less excited about this as his eyes begin to change and he sprouts werewolf teeth and claws and then smashes the mirror. It's something we see a number of times throughout the series, including memorably when Dean punches a mirror for thinking he sees the demon black returning to his eyes in late season 10. But Michael films himself touching Kate's sleeping face with his claws very gently, and then he goes on a binge, cleaning out all the leftovers in the fridge, but none of it can sate his hunger. And he has no idea what will sate his hunger at this point. Meanwhile, out by the field, Scott the asshat is out videoing himself and some friends, quote, patrolling, while armed only with various sporting equipment, on the lookout for whatever animal has been attacking people. Scott has to make it gross and be like, yeah, we're out here protecting all the honeys. Uh-huh, yeah, asshat. Anyway, on his mission to protect the innocent or whatever, he runs across Michael, carrying a couple of shopping bags full of groceries. He gets right up in Michael's face, clearly looking for a confrontation. He's just out there to beat something up, you know? Not trying to defend anyone from anything. He just taunts Michael, who drops his bags and just bolts off running. Scott thinks he's got the upper hand. Like, oh, Michael's threatened. He tries to lure Michael out by trash talking about how he's going to go visit Kate and show her what a real man is like. But Michael's already transformed. All of this is out of his control. Michael comes bursting from the trees, and Scott screams. And that is where our first commercial break fell. That's just so much. Kind of makes me wonder what Robbie Thompson had to do to get permission for that, you know? Because ad revenue is what pays for these shows to happen. So they really must have given him his whole season-long permission slip to do something wild and used it all up on that one continuous segment. After the commercial, we join Brian and Kate talking on the sofa. He asks if what is happening to Michael is scaring her, and she admits, yes, at first she was scared, but now it's kind of hot. And they're just companionably joking about this. So, of course, as soon as she says that, it has to become terrifying again. Michael comes in, covered with blood, with very little memory of what happened. He looks dazed and stunned and horrified. Kate tries to stop Brian from filming again, but of course he doesn't. Michael is clearly traumatized, but relates that he ran into Scott and started seeing red as he talked about Kate. He doesn't remember what happened after that, but he's pretty sure that he killed Scott. The next thing he remembered was running home, and he's pretty shaken up about it. All Brian wants to know is physical details about Michael himself, like he's jealous that Michael seemed to have claws when he came in. Kate is focused on more practical matters, like if anyone else saw Michael. She wants to protect him, and she finally grabs the camera from Brian, who isn't interested in just protecting his friend. Like, this was the line that Brian crossed that made Kate take the story into her own hands, you know? This just stopped being Brian's movie and became Kate's movie. Next, we see Kate running toward the crime scene where she sees Sam and Dean again, trying to gather her own evidence. Remember, she wanted to be a lawyer? She's going to gather evidence. She's going to do this methodically and innocent until proven guilty. Sam and Dean are very matter-of-fact about all the weird information they're getting, but Brian runs home with Kate on his heels. Michael's asleep when they get there, so Brian wakes him up and confronts him, yelling, asking if he ate a human heart. Michael's just confused, and Brian very accusatorily tells him what they found out. Well, Kate attempts to defend Michael and calm Brian down. Brian gets aggressive when he doesn't get answers he wants, and he shoves Michael. Brian asks if Michael's going to eat his heart, too. And once again, we see that Michael's been easygoing about their friendship the entire time. He's always felt solid and secure in their friendship. And Brian is never sure of his place in their friendship, even though it's literally never been threatened, only by his own actions. But Michael sends Brian flying across the room and over the kitchen table. Kate stops him from going after Brian, and Michael breaks down. Brian again films them through the door to their room when they're trying to have a private moment, as Michael lays with his head in Kate's lap, crying, terrified by what's happening to him. Kate assures him of who he is, that he's Michael, and that he's hers. Like, she's not going to leave him because of this. They'll figure this out together. She's standing by him, will support him, even though Brian is very clearly not going to do that much longer. Later in the main room, Brian tells Kate that they have to call the police. He's super angry that Kate is still standing by Michael. He tries to convince her that Michael's not good anymore, not good for her anymore. And Kate defends Michael again. He didn't mean to hurt Brian. But Brian believes that, yes, Michael did mean to hurt him. Kate says Brian doesn't understand because he's never been in love. She's not just going to abandon him. She knows that Michael didn't do it intentionally, and they're going to figure this out. And that's pretty shocking commentary, because we've had that line on the show before, delivered by Zombie Karen to Dean way back in season 5, when Dean couldn't understand why Karen would lie to Bobby to protect him from the awful truth, because she loved him and she wanted to bring him comfort, not pain. And that kind of proves that Brian's feelings for Kate just aren't love, because he's not there to bring her comfort. He just wants what he wants. She's just sort of the object of his desires and not someone he would give anything for, sacrifice anything for. He's got a very twisted idea of what that is. Anyway, we cut to a camera angle that shows Brian staring at Kate after this line, and then turning his back on her as if to say Brian clearly thinks he is in love with Kate, and she tells him that they need answers. And being smart, she thinks that Sam and Dean might have answers for them. Michael goes with her as she does some investigative journalism, finding Dean talking to somebody outside the coroner's office. The coroner is doubtful that it was a wild animal attack based on the wounds, and the biggest animal they have in the area is a raccoon. Nothing big enough to make those wounds. Meanwhile, Michael's trying to coax Kate back out of danger. He's still worried for her safety. He doesn't want her in trouble with the FBI. But she catches another chat between Sam and Dean. Dean may have hit a dead end, but Sam found an identical murder 10 years ago. But we can tell that he's already ruled out werewolf because it happened at the wrong time of the month. Kate doesn't know what that means yet, though. She's convinced that they need to keep following the FBI guys because they know more than they've said yet. Michael is unconvinced, but they're interrupted by Brian showing up. He found them through the GPS on their phones, which isn't creepy at all. When Michael says out loud how much he's creeped out by it, Brian says the feeling's mutual, and their friendship has clearly chilled. When Kate hears about Brian's hacking, she asks what else he can hack into, and he says anything. So they hack into the surveillance cameras at the restaurant where Sam and Dean are eating and looking through their research notes. They can't hear anything, so Michael volunteers to go into the restaurant, close enough to record them with a concealed camera. Sam's salad and Dean's plate with two burgers arrives, and Sam is clearly back to judging Dean for his food choices. No more getting him burgers and fries. And Dean says that he hasn't eaten there for more than a year, reminding us and Sam about his year in purgatory, but of course that sounds different to an outsider without that context. Dean finds some information in the big book he's reading that werewolves within four generations of a pure blood, which he takes to mean an alpha, have a lot more control and can transform outside of the full moon. Sam reads on about purebloods not blacking out when they transform, and that they can choose to subsist on an animal's hearts instead of humans. Sam also says out loud that he hopes silver can kill this type of werewolf. But they deduce that a werewolf settled there 10 years ago, killed that previous victim, and then just subsisted on animals until losing control again recently. And they're just saying this out loud in public where anyone could overhear them. And literally nobody else seems perturbed by any of it. Which is honestly remarkable on its own, you know? Like, nobody else is noticing they're having this weird, serious conversation about werewolves. Anyway, back at their house, our friends watch the footage, and Michael realizes that might be exactly what's happened to him. Kate has smartly deduced that these are not actual FBI guys because FBI don't hunt and kill college students or say awesome that much. But even having been sat at the next table, Michael did not hear their whole conversation and asks Brian if they said anything else. Brian jokes that they've been apart for years, so maybe it's some kind of office romance like Michael had joked about before. But Michael's being serious because he's scared. What does this mean for him? Kate's trying to maintain calm. She rationally realizes that the FBI guys are not looking for Michael. They're actually looking for the werewolf who bit him. She's still trying to solve their problems. Michael is not at all happy about this situation. He's pissed he's going to have to eat animal hearts for the rest of his life. And Kate leaves with him in order to calm him down. Meanwhile, Brian looks back at the footage of Michael's original attack, and he spots something in it. But instead of coming out to see, Kate just slams the door to their room. She's having a hard enough time just dealing with Michael in that moment, so Brian takes matters into his own hands. He goes out to find the spot where Michael was attacked, and finds the pin that we saw earlier on the lapel of their English professor. And because of who Brian is as a person, and the fact that he's still trying to make this into some sort of movie, he sets up hidden cameras around the professor's office, When the professor comes in, Brian confronts him on camera with, "I know what you are." We cut back to their house, where Kate is crying and packing their things. She and Michael are leaving for his safety. But Brian comes back in and assures them that he took care of everything. They don't have to worry. Which, of course, makes them both worry for what Brian did. So he shows them the footage he filmed in the professor's office. Brian confronted the professor, demanding to be turned into a werewolf. The professor tries to deny everything, but Brian has a silver knife and threatens him. Brian really, really wants to be a monster. The next scene we see is the professor back in his chair, and Brian interrogating him about what happened, why he killed that first victim. Did he just get a taste for human hearts again? And the professor says, "You never lose the taste. Once you have one, it's almost impossible to resist." He knew a hunter would show up eventually, so he bit Michael to be a decoy for the hunters to grab and assume that they got their werewolf. The professor picked Michael because he sleeps through all of his lectures, so who would miss him? Brian says, "I would." But honestly, Brian is not really being honest with himself about that, is he? The professor asks why Brian is doing all of this, and he answers that he wants to see what you see and do what you do. He doesn't want to be Piggy. He wants to be Ralph. Right back to our Lord of the Flies references. And isn't that just horrifying? The professor replies that we don't get to choose who we are, and Brian rolls up his sleeve and shows his healing bite to the camera. Because, yeah, he got to choose who he wanted to be. And it's terrible. It was a terrible choice, Brian, okay? Kate and Michael are both horrified, but Brian just replies, "You're welcome for saving your ass," and then shows them the footage of the professor destroying his office, discovering the hidden camera, and then getting shot by Dean before he could stop the recording. As he dies with a silver bullet in his heart, the professor actually says, "Thank you," like they've ended his suffering. Dean comments that he's never killed a pureblood before, and Sam wonders what the professor had been looking at when they pulled him away, and they find the camera. And we know what a pureblood is now that we've already seen season 9. It's not an alpha. It's someone who was born a werewolf. For all we know, this professor was some distant or even close relative of Bess. Which is interesting to think about, yes? But back at their house, Brian thinks that the hunters will just move on now that they killed their pureblood. He's so super confident about this too, like way too confident. And even Himbo Michael has realized that the hunters found the camera and will trace it back to Brian. Brian derisively turns Michael's own words back on him. He finally figured out what he wanted and he's taking it. And the whole truth comes out. He's tired of living in Michael's shadow, but now they're equals. And thank heck for all the cameras planted around their house, because we get all the camera angles for their upcoming fight. Michael is furious at Brian for having done this to himself. He's trying to convey the full horror of what he's been experiencing to Brian, who only judges Michael to be weak. Brian did it because Michael wouldn't bite him. And Kate is horrified to learn that Brian would have even asked Michael to do that. Brian tells Kate that he did all of this to protect her, and Kate insists that she can take care of herself. Michael tries to step in to get Brian away from her, and they fight. Of course, Michael still doesn't want to hurt Brian, but Brian has no such care and stabs Michael with the silver knife. As he dies, Michael tells Kate that he's sorry, as if any of this had been his fault. Kate pulls out the knife and charges at Brian, just slashing. She gets one cut in before he restrains her, and Brian tells her that he loves her, and that she'll understand after he bites her too. She fights her way free, but Brian is faster, and he catches her and bites her. We then cut to Kate sobbing in the bathroom, her reflection shattered in the broken mirror, while Brian begs for her to let him in. She goes on a little rampage, smashing things up before getting herself back under control. She picks up the camera, tells Brian she's coming out, that she sees it now. And Brian's relieved. He thinks they're going to have some happily ever after. But Kate smiles and sets the camera down, and then wolfs out on him and rips him apart. Covered in Brian's blood, she cries over Michael's body, covers him with a sheet because he's who she cares about, and then she gets to work on her movie. At the end, she talks directly into the camera, explaining to Sam and Dean that she's not trying to justify what happened. She just wanted them to know that Michael wasn't always a monster. And I would personally argue that Michael was never a monster. Maybe the real monster was Brian, but Kate even defends him. We see their in 5 years footage again, because those dreams are gone forever now. Kate won't be going back to law school. Brian won't be working for HBO or making documentaries. And Michael won't be boating with the love of his life. Kate says she's leaving. She knows there's another way. She's never killed a human or eaten a human heart, and she never will. She can live without hurting anyone. She didn't choose this, and she wants them to give her a chance to not hunt her down. And doesn't that all sound weirdly familiar? Sam's never going back to law school. Even one episode after Dean discovered that Sam had been making inquiries with the college about going back to classes. And Dean didn't choose any of this life for himself, did he? He'd do anything to spare his loved ones suffering, though. He'll take anything on himself to spare anyone else having to suffer with it. And they both understand the plight of these kids, who a week ago thought werewolves were movie monsters and were innocently planning their happy futures together before something monstrous invaded their lives. And I'm sorry, but that just sounds so much like the overarching plot of Supernatural, doesn't it? After watching Kate's film, Sam and Dean identify the two bodies. Sam checks his watch, figures Kate has half a day's jump on them, and Dean just stands there looking over the scene and replying indifferently. Like, That's all he can manage his answers here. Sam rationalizes that Kate hasn't hurt anyone. And Dean adds that, yeah, she didn't choose this. They should give her a shot. Sam is surprised that Dean would agree. But then Sam says if she runs across their radar again, no questions, they just end her. And he frames it as, we'll do what we have to, which is very much a we had no other choice comment if I ever heard one, and will become even more relevant in a few episodes down the line once he finds out about Benny. But here, as Sam is collecting all the video evidence and her hard drive, he's talking fast, like he's trying to prove to Dean that, yeah, he'd back him up if Kate killed someone down the line. Like, he's just relieved that Dean agreed to let her go and doesn't want Dean to change his mind about not running after her immediately. Sam really is proving that he is not a Dean understander in this episode, isn't he? But Dean's real subdued for the rest of the scene, looking at a picture of Kate, asking Sam if he really does say awesome too much. And when Sam says no, eventually, Dean just replies, awesome. He restarts Kate's music as they leave the bodies behind for someone else to clean up and try to figure out what the hell happened here. And then we cut to Kate getting out of a semi-truck after getting a ride out of town, and then heading off down the railroad tracks alone into her entirely uncertain future. And that's how this episode ends. It took less than a week to destroy all of these people's lives, and all we gained from it was some vague lore about pureblood werewolves that won't even be clarified for more than a season. And yeah, Sam and Dean didn't know about purebloods before this episode either, and still don't know that there's whole communities of them out there just quietly living their lives and subsisting on animal hearts. They don't know Kate has a community that would embrace her and welcome her. And in a couple years when they meet her again, I think the only unforgivable thing they do to her is to still not tell her to contact Garth and Bess, you know? Poor thing. But we'll complain about that in season 10. For now, I hope the parallels are at least somewhat clear here. Yes, this episode wasn't really directly about Sam and Dean. They were more plot devices than characters really represented on screen. But this episode was still entirely about them. They didn't really choose any of this. They aren't really the bad guys hunting down rogue monsters, you know? But they're about to make themselves into the bad guys by actively choosing to try and change the very structure of the universe, and they still have no idea. They still think they're doing the right thing, like poor idiot Brian, who just wanted to prove himself, to let himself feel like an equal to Michael, even though Michael never saw him as inferior. That was all Brian's problem, you know? It reminds me of a very similar thematic conversation that Sam and Dean will have towards the end of this season, where Sam is talking about how he always felt inferior, how he always felt impure, and he just wished he could be the hero of the piece like Dean. Sound familiar? Comes from this. Was the professor a bad guy? Arguably, he knew exactly what was going on. He was the only one who really had any choices in this entire matter, and he chose to try and set up Michael as the patsy to take the fall for him. But was Brian then the bad guy? Demanding to be bitten? Threatening to out the professor for what he was if he didn't get what he wanted? I mean, the professor's last words were, "Thank you. Thank you for putting him out of his misery, ending his suffering." Were Sam and Dean the bad guys for doing their job? Hunting the werewolf who killed an innocent person? Because in the end, they chose to let Kate live. Did Brian truly love Kate? Or did he just want what Michael had? And that included Kate. Does it even matter? But he tried to take higher powers that he really did not understand into his own hands, thinking it would solve all of his problems. And it really, really did not work out in his favor. It got his best friend killed, who would have done anything for him. He got himself killed, and he left the woman he claimed to love alone and terrified of what he'd made her into. And it's all just so sad, because by the end of the season, Sam will try to take a similar higher power into his own hands, and it brings on so much shit that won't get resolved for seasons to come. And that nearly gets all of them killed, or at least nearly gets Sam killed. Cass loses his grace, and for a hot minute, Dean's left alone and terrified of the situation he's been left with. Oh, heck. There's really a lot in this often overlooked episode, isn't there? Robbie Thompson really nailed it. Next week, at least, we're back to Sam and Dean carrying the story, though. Sam through some more weird flashbacks to his life with Amelia. And Dean through flashbacks to his time in Purgatory as he helps Benny sort out his own past. And Sam will finally find out about Benny and start getting real pissy about his existence, which is always fun. And by fun, I mean not fun. Anyway, until then, you can find me on Tumblr at MittensMorgul or at SPNGeorge, or you can find me on Discord and Blue Sky as MittensMorgul, or you can email me at mittensmorgul@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everybody again real soon. And I am really relieved to have finished recording this one because I made pancakes for dinner tonight and burned my upper lip so bad. It just hurts to talk. It hurts to smile. It hurts to open my mouth. And yet here I am still talking. So I think I'm going to stop talking now and go like soak my mouth in ice water again, because oh my god, it hurts so bad. Anyway, don't ever try and eat pancakes directly off the hot spatula, because you're an idiot, Mittens. You're an idiot. God damn it. I should know better by now. How long have I been making pancakes? Like at least 40 years. Yeah. I still can't believe I did that. Anyway. Have a good one, everyone.